Conspiracy.
Dogman.
Sasquatch.
Homunculus.
Alien races.
Anunnaki.
Corey Feldman.
Ghost Dad.
Yes! That's cool.
Poltergeist.
Spirit summoning.
Magicians are demons.
Anunnaki.
Close the door,
close the door!
What is the moon?
Cover-ups.
MK Ultra.
Shadow people.
Disagreements.
Quiet, I'm trying to say words with my mouth.
Vampire.
Well, hello, hello.
Well, hello, hello.
Hi. Welcome, my brothers of the whole.
Thank you.
Welcome to be here. Are you excited?
I'm pretty excited.
I hope so.
I am so stoked.
You should be excited. And all of you listening out there should be excited and watching as well, because today we have a fantastic episode. It is Listener Stories 31. That's right. Listener Stories is in its 30s.
31, have some fun.
That's right.
That's what I say.
It's feeling its age. And this is kind of a special one, I thought, for the 30s, for our for the 31st birthday, as we start getting towards the middle age period of the Listener Stories. It might be fun to...
It's a weird analogy.
To pick some stories that would normally be in some of our anthologies, like Camp Creepily, Varsity Booze, Haunted Planet. Anyways, we do the sort of anthologies.
So a little taster from each.
Little tasters. I don't have one from every category because I wanted to get a really big variety today.
Definitely some pretty original ones. I mean, just kind of creepy too and weird.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I read one that was just super unusual.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. We'll get to that. That was the Bump Bump.
The Bump Bump.
No, I don't think you gave John the Bump Bump, but I'm looking forward to that one.
Oh, I didn't. You're right. That's another really unique one that we'll get to.
Yeah, I knew you'd be excited about that one.
Oh, yeah. I remember. It had to do with a medical condition.
Ah.
That's a great story.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kind of like just bizarre, like Twilight Zone-ish kind of.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Parallel lives.
Yeah. I thought it was going towards near death. Kind of was, but then it's
so
also like alternate reality. So that's going to be really, yeah, a lot of great stories coming up, guys. And like Chris said, there are pieces from each kind of anthology episodes we do. So if you hear one, you're like, I got a story like that. Well, you can go to bluefold.com and send it on in to our listener story submission, or you can click the link in the show notes. So do it.
Yes. And if you've been listening for a while, you're aware that our strange listener stories, we try to find the strangest of the strange stories, especially in these variety strange listener stories episodes, some of the more unique cases within the archives of the whole. And coming up on this episode, we've got mimicking monsters at the door, parallel reality transporting NDEs. John, that's, I think, the one you're referring to.
Oh, yeah.
7-foot-tall imposter entities bouncing down the hallway.
The Bump Bump.
And a predicted plane crash in the way of Final Destination, among others.
Yeah, one of my favorite stories, stick around to the end, guys, is if you're familiar with the Final Destination franchise that synchronistically just came out.
Yeah, the conclusion.
I just came across a story that we've had for years from Lobster Jimmy, or Elizabeth, that is, it's basically a Final Destination premonition kind of tragic story, but it's fascinating and really compelling. So stick around for that one.
Which is interesting timing because we just saw the latest installation and maybe the last one, Final Destination.
Yeah.
In theaters. You can't beat the first one, but it was good. I will say that.
It was a fun movie.
Yes. Okay.
Let's get some fun stories.
Let's do it. Why don't we jump in with the one John was referring to, one of my favorites from this episode. All right. Well, this would be a great example for our Camp Creepily anthology, because this does indeed take place while on a camping trip.
Nice.
These days, we're all yearning to connect more, I think, with Mother Nature. But what happens when during your escape into the natural, you become prisoner of the supernatural?
Ah, yes. Familiar tale.
This is what happens to Rachel and her friends. July 15th, 2023, between 11 and 11:20 p.m. And this is called Whispering Monsters at the Door.
Hello, my name is Rachel, and my experience happened in a small town called Lowell, Oregon. I went there with my friend's family for just a small visit to the Dexter Reservoir. My friend's grandma had grown up there. We stayed in a small cabin, booked off of Airbnb close to the lake. It was a small cabin, but had a large amount of property. The night of the attack, me and my friend were bored. We decided to go out on the huge deck that surrounded the cabin to watch the stars. We sat down on the far side of the deck. We brought out bug spray, both of our phones, and sweaters. We had been sitting out there nearly 20 minutes before we heard it. On the shore of the lake, we heard a woman scream. She sounded like she was in pain. It was far enough away where it wasn't threatening. I looked at my friend and started to ask, "Should we go inside?" Before I could finish my sentence, we heard it again significantly closer. It was already halfway to us. The screech was even more haunting and terrifying than the first one. We both stood up. Neither of us said anything. Nearly 5 seconds later, it was right in front of us. It screeched, screamed, and growled. I felt my heart drop and panic set in. We ran straight back to the cabin, slamming the door shut and locking it. "What the hell was that?" I said, staring at my friend. "Shit, I left my phone out there," she said in response. We were too bothered to go back outside, so we waited 30 minutes before we tried anything. After 30 minutes, my friend grabbed a dinky flashlight from the dollar store out of her bag and slowly opened the front door. I followed behind her. We didn't even make it past 2 paces before the only bush outside of our cabin rustled and snapped. It wasn't like a squirrel or rabbit. It sounded like a creature as big as a human. We slammed the door shut and quickly sat with our backs against the door. We both sat there with our knees to our chests. We didn't speak. Only 2 minutes later, loud footsteps and thumps slowly walk up to the door. We heard the wood creaking beneath its feet. I looked at my friend in fear. I've never been so afraid of anything in my life. It stopped as it got to the door. As I stared blankly at the floor, it started to whisper.
Feldrochali, Prasakinomo, Tremolo, Branchadoltic, Doltic, Tick.
It whispered and talked in what sounded like English, but no real words. Tears slowly poured out of my eyes. I was shaking and felt like I couldn't breathe. I looked back at my friend, and she was crying too. I didn't stop for 3 minutes. I plugged my ears and quietly cried. My friend's grandma woke up to us crying.
"What is going on?"
she asked. We couldn't even answer. She looked annoyed.
"Keep it down!"
she sighed. She just sighed and went back to bed. I didn't sleep the whole night. I sat in the same position till morning.
Man.
Nice grandma.
Remind me to avoid Lowell, Oregon.
Yeah, I've read accounts actually in Southern Oregon that are similar to this. With, again, that mimicking, luring.
She didn't describe it, though, did she? Like, what it looked like?
I don't think she saw it. I think it was all auditory. They heard this terrifying thing sound. Again, sounds like someone in trouble. You know, a woman in trouble, the luring thing, the baiting you to get you to come out into the forest. And when they don't, when that terrifies them, they go inside. And then that's when they hear the large footsteps on the front porch. That's when they get the scratching at the door and the whispering in different languages or whatever it was.
There are mountain lions, right, that have the scream of a woman.
That's true.
Say. Mm-hmm. But they don't walk upright and approach cabins and scratch the door.
They also don't whisper in strange languages.
Yeah.
At the cabin door.
Yeah, that's super creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounded like it was pretty traumatic.
I want to see if I can figure out what Airbnb it was. Not that I would go there, but I'm just kind of curious if there's any other reviews maybe on one of those vacation websites. Very strange.
4 stars. I would give it 5, but there was a monster.
You know, she mentioned something about she thought it was a skinwalker. And at first I was like, you know, you hear that a lot. A lot of people kind of jump to that partially because it's been
so popularized
in the current zeitgeist or culture. So people go, oh, it sounds like skinwalker. But what's weird is I did come across reports in Lower Oregon of skinwalker activity, which also seems strange to me because, you know, skinwalker, it's a Navajo dark witchcraft thing. And that's not really near reservation.
Yeah, I do feel like skinwalker or even Wendigo now is kind of a catch-all term, it seems like.
Yeah, for sure.
Because the skinwalker, I'm pretty sure is specific to the Navajo or the Diné culture.
Right.
And I think I pronounced this wrong every time, but Diné, I think that's how you say Diné, but I don't know. We're definitely not linguists, but skinwalker or Yanaldushi, I think that's a terribly pronounced Navajo term for the skinwalker. But yeah, it does seem like it's kind of been transported through popular culture and stories bubbling up on online.
TikTok and Reddit. Yeah, as like just a cryptid, basically.
Yeah, it just gets applied to things. And I get it because the most popular kind of view of the skinwalker or the manifestation in story is kind of the werewolf, which ties in with the popularity of the dogman. So every skinwalker sounds kind of like a dogman or something mysterious in the woods.
Right, and it gets transported into different parts of the country.
Right.
It seems to be like it's applied to things that don't really match what it actually is.
Yeah. And you do have like there's not a Navajo region up here.
Yeah.
But regardless, sounds like a terrifying entity. Yes.
Always reminds me of this.
Shorts Brewing?
No.
Oh, Disembodied Voices?
Tim Marzenko's Disembodied Voices, the same sort of phenomenon.
Yeah.
Great book. I forget what the Leshy, that's what he kind of equated it to towards the summary of the book.
That's right,
the
mimicking voices.
Mm-hmm. Another culture, another part of the world.
Luring you out to snatch you up.
And finally, this is the classic entity at the threshold stuff.
Yeah, bring on the boogeyman.
And in other similar cases we've heard, whatever an entity like this might be, using familial voices.
Right.
Like someone like grandma, your friend, your brother, sometimes yourself.
Yeah. And you get that robotic kind of sound.
Right. What's interesting about this to me is what she said in that story, and we mentioned kind of what the thing sounded like before, but it wasn't other languages or unknown languages or ancient languages. It was, quote, it whispered and talked in what sounded like English, but not real words. And yeah, to me, that sounds like something that doesn't quite have a handle on the noises it's making to convince its prey that it's safe to open the door.
Never spoken the language before, but knows what it should say. Doesn't quite know how.
Exactly. Anyway, thank you for sharing that story, Rachel.
Yeah.
We really appreciate that. All right, this next account, every kid has nightmares. But what if that nightmare knows your name? What if it comes back every night, dressed in the patchwork of familiar family life, just waiting to play?
What?
Yeah. Did you follow that?
Okay.
For Lauren, this thing had a face, it had a name, and maybe coworkers.
Huh.
John, this is that strange one I mentioned at the beginning. This comes to us from Lauren in Kansas City, Montana, and this occurred between 2008 and 2013. This is called the Bump Bump.
Oh, yes.
Bump Bump.
Hi, my name is Lauren, and I just graduated from high school. But I can still feel the fear I had remembering these encounters that took place from far back as I can remember. My earliest memories involved the bump bump. And I would say it went on until I was about 7. I never knew what was real and what was a nightmare. The bump bump, as I called him, was what looked like a 7-foot-tall nail plush, almost like it was made of fabric and had a symbol for my mom's basketball shirt on the top of his head. My mom would later tell me that I said it had red glowing eyes. But I don't remember that particular detail for sure. I don't know what it actually was or why it took this form, but my dad was always doing construction projects, and my mom always wore that basketball shirt with that symbol. So maybe I saw it that way as a way to comfort me. But I vividly remember being terrified every night as the bump bump would start bouncing out of the hallway closet and into my bedroom by my crib. It talked to me, but it didn't have a mouth. It was like I could just hear what it was saying. I remember he would always want to play a game with me, something like hide and seek or other kids' games. And it was always either in my house, yard, or at my grandma's house. He was friends with my dad and my mom and my whole family, but I was terrified. I hated him. He terrified me, and I would say, I don't want to play, but I didn't have a choice. I would have brushed this off as a weird childhood nightmare, but he was there as early as I can remember, every single night, every single day. I never knew if I was dreaming or if he was actually there. I can't truly explain the fear I felt. It was like life or death level fear, and there was nothing I could do to get rid of him. After a while, when I was about 6 or 7, my sister was born, and I stopped seeing him every night like I used to. But I remember thinking before I went to bed one night that I needed to see him. Then, that night, I woke up, dreaming I was in my kitchen. I remember he was there, standing in the kitchen with cupcakes, like he was trying to appear friendly. He always did that. He never did anything to scare me, but the fear would never leave me. I think he knew I was terrified, but he would still try to appear friendly so he could keep coming back. I remember telling him I never wanted to see him again, and that I would not let him torment my younger sister like he tormented me. He seemed disappointed, or like he was saying, "No, I'm your friend," but I put my foot down. I woke up that morning and never saw him again. And my sister has never seen him in her dreams either. More recently, maybe at 16, I went into my closet to put clothes away and turned to leave when a hanger suddenly flew at the wall in the closet. I brushed it off at first, like, oh, maybe it was falling off anyway. But as I stepped further away, these Halloween costume glasses, sitting completely flat in the back of the shelf, flew off and hit the wall forcefully. That was my cue to close the closet door and leave for a while. Nothing has happened in there since, but I do sometimes have dreams that predict the future. All of these weird things have me thinking maybe this was some kind of entity attached to me or feeding from my energy as a kid, like your episode on puppets and Muppets in kids' closets. But the whole thing just felt very odd, like it was an entity trying to disguise itself in friendly, familiar things and show me visions of my family loving him, almost as a way to hide how evil it felt. And I believe he had helpers, as I called them. One of them looked like a toy cowboy on a toy horse. The other was a purple spider. Both appeared to be around 3 feet tall, and they would also come out of that closet. I wasn't going to put this in the story originally, but as I was remembering all this, I did recall that it was almost like they worked for him, but seemed uncomfortable around him, almost like they wanted to help me, like they were sorry that I was seeing him. I just thought that detail was interesting, like maybe he is some kind of evil entity who somehow is making these other creatures help him feed on kids. Or maybe the whole bump bump was simply a night terror, but I can't ever forget the terror I felt every night throughout my whole childhood as he bounced out of that closet and wanted to play a game with me.
Yeah, and fascinating.
Yeah, and the fact that it not only does it keep coming back every night through the childhood, but it comes back later in life.
I can just see that scene where she's standing in the kitchen, this giant nail.
What a strange vision.
Soft, plushy nail holding cupcakes. Like, I want you to think I'm your friend.
Yeah.
Maybe I am your friend. But
your family loves me.
Sense of evil is still there. It cannot hide that. And it would disguise itself as something familiar. So a construction nail, because her dad works in construction, and then her mom's baseball jersey on its head.
It was
something.
Her mom's basketball, like high school logo, was on its head.
So bizarre.
So it was like it was clothing itself in.
It was like sucking these from her mind of like things that make her feel
comfortable.
Things that are familiar to her and comfortable. And it clothes itself in that. Where's the skin of the bump bump?
You know what that reminds me of?
What?
It.
Ah.
I said it earlier, but you missed it.
I know. Did that disappoint you when I didn't corroborate that?
I didn't. I felt bad that I said it for you because it felt wrong.
That's corroboration.
Well, you took the torch.
That's true.
It's not a torch I need. I have enough torches. I don't need to be the it guy.
What else does it remind you of, though? Reminds me of that whole returning panel of strange, what did you call them the other day, Jared?
Oh, yeah.
Cribside creepers.
Yeah, crib creepers.
Yeah.
Like Owl Man, if you guys remember that story way back, these things that
come to the children.
I guess the younger the kid, I don't know. the more value they have to these things. But yeah.
And then the imposter entity Crib Creepers, like the, what was the weird Quick Oats guy or whatever, the oatmeal dude?
Yeah. Redenbacher, the popcorn guy.
Redenbacher. Yeah. Evil Orville Redenbacher. Anyways.
And the oat guy too, yeah.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. And as she referenced that episode we did on the imposter entities being the nightmare feeders. I mean, that's a whole thing. I'd love to do a book, John. You mentioned it'd be a great title.
Oh, yeah. During the, what was the thing
Muppets
she said?
Muppets and Puppets and Things in the Closet or something.
Muppets and Puppets and Things in the Closet. Something like that.
Things in Kids' Closets?
Yeah.
There's so much to that. I feel like that could be explored. We definitely need to do a sequel to that imposter entity episode.
Yeah, we definitely do. So if you guys have any experiences like that, make sure they're true.
Yes.
No fakies in here.
Priority number one.
Only real stories, but we definitely want to hear them because they're, you know, it happens a lot, I would argue.
More than you'd think. All right, but her tale is not over. There's a quick follow-up here that she included. This was not the end of the bump bump because as we all know, sometimes they come back.
Sorry, Lauren again. I just remembered another creepy thing that happened as I was older, possibly connecting with the story. One night, as I was sleeping in a new home my family had moved into, maybe when I was around 15 years old, we had just celebrated a birthday party and had tied balloons to the stairs that day. Well, I remember going to sleep and waking up to something tickling my face. And I woke up to a balloon hovering over me. I was obviously startled, but brushed it off. Then, a few months later, we had another party with balloons. We had tied them to the stairs that day as well. Again, I went to bed, and some point later, I heard a loud smack and woke up to see a balloon getting hit by my ceiling fan. I was frightened, but again, brushed it off and walked into the hallway and tied it to the linen closet doorknob, tightly, I thought. I went back to bed and closed my door, leaving it just barely cracked, maybe an inch at most. That morning, I woke up to the balloon in the corner of my room, almost watching me. I was creeped out and popped it. And then finally, a few months later, again, we had another party. Again, we tied the balloons to the stairs. And again, I went to bed. The next morning, I woke up. No balloon. But then, I went into my closet to change. And there was the balloon, just floating there. The closet door had been closed before I opened it, so I thought my sister put it in there as a joke because of the last few times that this happened. I confronted her and I said,
"Ha ha, very funny. Why did you put the balloon in my closet?"
She told me she hadn't. I thought she was lying, but she looked at me and told me very seriously and swore on her life that she didn't. My heart fell. How could it have gotten in there? It's worth mentioning as well that my room was at the very end of the upstairs hall. The balloon would have to float up the stairway, 5 feet towards the upstairs hallway, past my parents' room, the linen closet, the laundry room, and then make a hard right through my door and into my room. From there, it would have to float straight, make a 180-degree turn, float a few feet, and then go right into a closed closet door. The air in the house doesn't flow that way, and it is extremely unlikely it could have made it that far in such a little time. But again, this has me thinking, is something attached to me? Is the bump bump still in the closet? And why do strange things keep happening?
Evil balloons.
Man.
Sounds fun.
The balloon self-operation stuff, like the floating on its own, going in strange directions, seemingly being pulled by something.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty common. One of my ex-girlfriends, when her mom died, had a similar experience. Her aunt saw this thing. It floated down a hallway. It was like the day after, I think, she had died. It floated down the hallway, came down the stairs, and came next to her. So again, it just makes me think of these things. If you're gonna try to manipulate something in this reality,
one of the easiest things to do
on this side of the veil, one of the easiest things to probably manipulate is something that's already floating in the air.
It's very light, easy to move. Yeah, if you're Patrick Swayze trying to move something on the other side, you know,
yes,
something light,
takes a lot of energy, but maybe not a balloon. And of course, the bump bump. Where does it end? Where does this balloon end up? Back in that closet where the bump bump resides.
Back in the sewers of Derry.
Good story. Is that? Oh, that's you guys.
Oh, the horn. Yeah.
The train.
Yeah.
All right.
That is the announcement of It the Clown.
The horn.
The clown horn.
The great dirge horn.
That'd be scary.
Yeah.
If every time you heard that.
It appears.
It reminds me of Silent Hill. Is it Silent Hill?
Yeah.
Where that air raid siren goes off.
It's Silent Hill, but I never really played that game or saw the movie.
The first one's pretty good.
I think I might have seen
it's pretty creepy. It
a long time ago.
They have good ambiences.
There's like a big guy that wears like a thing over his head.
Uh-huh.
Big metal.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
He just drags the sword around. He's
this
huge man, this beast man. He probably weighs like 1,000 pounds.
Beast man.
He just drags this monstrous sword behind him and he has like a, it almost looks like a paper sailboat.
Ew. Yeah. That's very Hellraiser-y to me. It's like this sort of like this triangular giant metal mask, but the nose comes down like the Beetlejuice pullout thing.
Yeah.
It's pretty creepy.
Pull their faces out.
I remember thinking that was creepy in the movie. It's just so menacing.
Yeah. And just so odd. Almost interdimensional looking.
Now, is that the concept of that they're coming out of, like from another dimension, out of the mist or something?
Something, yes. Coming from some other place.
Kind of like Stephen King's The Mist.
And every time that siren goes off, it's just, take cover.
Oh, that's like the warning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, that would be terrifying.
I'm going to have to look that up right now.
Add that to the watch list.
Oh, what? Oh, wait. We're on the same Chrome browser.
What did it just suggest it to you?
I typed in silent and it said hill man with the sword. I was like, okay. You're listening to everything we say now? I mean, I know they are, but...
They are, yeah.
Oh, that's super, super creepy.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Anyway, makes me want to play video games, which I will do one day again. Okay, so this next tale.
Yeah, let's switch it up a little bit, Chris. Let's mix it and let's do something from a different genre of the strange. This is a really cool account. The Tale from the Sky. I love to imagine the setup here. Just imagine being there. You're in the desert of the American Southwest. Still night, dark sky. Military grade, night vision goggles.
All right.
The perfect atmosphere and the perfect position to be in, to see something maybe you're not supposed to.
Yes, and this comes to us from Rob. This happened in New Mexico at 10 p.m.
This is called We Didn't See That.
I was in New Mexico for some military training near Socorro, New Mexico, near a big telescope. I've never been there before, but I laughed when I realized exactly where I was at because I played Fallout 3 before, and the very large array is on the map in the game. I was with the CSM, Commander Sergeant Major, hanging breach doors to later be blown down with explosives. The CSM, who was on Sean Ryan's show, is pretty famous now. Really awesome guy. Told me, let's go chill and wait for the hit since it took a couple hours for them to get up the mountain. So we're sitting out on the rocks looking up at the night sky with our white phosphor PV S14s. Not a cloud in the sky. Enjoying the view. Stars everywhere. Within a couple minutes, I see what looks like a shooting star. Then it takes a 90-degree turn and disappears. I'm like, whoa, that's awesome. But then it happens again, and again, and again, all over the sky, like it's a highway. I yell to the CSM, all excited, and ask him, hey, are you seeing this? He looks ahead at me with his night vision on. The reflection of his night vision glasses glowing through my night vision, pauses for a moment while staring at me and just says, nope, and slowly looked away. Never before in my life did someone get a point across so hard with one single word. Point taken. It was exciting right up until that moment. Then it scared the heck out of me. Love the show, guys. When God takes away Art Bell, rest in peace, he gave us the belief hole. Rob.
Aw. Thanks, Rob.
Pretty big compliment. Thank you.
Yeah, that's high praise, my friend. Seriously.
Yeah.
I love that. It's just a little account, but it is. There's so many little pieces in there that you hear all the time. The, you know, kind of self-censorship of people and certain positions who have access to things or see things. And the goggles. If you guys are out there in the military, I know it's like, it's a, what is it? A court-martial offense or something? If you steal those goggles or resell them or whatever, you can't take them home because they can show you demons or some kind of craft.
The helicopter story that we heard.
Yeah. Remember the goggles? I mean, that was a different kind of goggle, allegedly.
It's also probably grand theft. Probably not just that you can see demons, yeah. But I imagine that's another reason why it's illegal.
Yeah, I don't think you can necessarily see demons with these goggles, but to see the sky, there's a lot of footage online of people who use different kinds of night vision goggles where it's so regular that you can see things like, you know, is it the SRB?
Oh, the
TRB-3, the triangular.
Black triangle, classic.
Black triangle kind of. A craft, a lot of those formations, just strange, anomalous things you can see so much better with these goggles. So I'm sure I wouldn't be surprised at all if he saw something anomalous like this.
Reminds me of Brian's story a little bit with the just zipping and zapping all over. Kind of like your story too, John. I know we talked about that too, but I love that idea of like aerial highways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these things just like zipping and zapping around. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, Rob.
Yeah, Rob. Thank you so much.
You know, if you ever find yourself out in the desert, about to be abducted by a strange craft in the sky, it wouldn't be bad to have on hand a tasty, yummy, healthy snack. And there's no better meal on the go than Factor.
Yes!
This episode brought to you by Factor. Well, summer has finally arrived, and no one wants to be wasting the most beautiful time of year. Going to and fro to the grocery store, spending hours preparing and cooking in the hot kitchen. You want to be outside enjoying the day and hunting for monsters. With Factor, meal prep is quick and easy. The meals arrive fresh right at your doorstep. And they have 45 weekly menu options that you can choose from. Whether you're into calorie smart, protein plus, keto, they got your back. And you know, I've mentioned this on the show before, but it needs to be repeated that there has been many a night and many a day that we here in the hole have just not had time to get to the store and make sure we had something healthy and delicious to eat. And we've had to sacrifice. But thanks to Factor, we don't have to worry about that anymore. So if you're out there and you're listening to this and you get hungry and you gotta eat food like every other human on the planet and you're enduring the challenges of a busy lifestyle and you want healthy options, give Factor a try like we did. You can get started today at factormeals.com/beliefwhole50off and use the code beliefwhole50off to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. That's code beliefwhole50off at factormeals.com/beliefwhole50off. For 50% off plus free shipping. That's factormeals.com/beliefwhole50off. All right, for our final story before we go to break, this is a unique one that Jeremy really wanted to do. So I'm excited because Jeremy likes really strange things. This is called Tiny Legs.
Yeah, I almost did this on the doll expansion episode we just did, the possessed dolls. But I don't know what this is. It's just a weird little one-off of strangeness. Little tiny legs.
Yes, this comes to us from Jana, and this occurred in Grand Rapids, Michigan, somewhere around 2006, 2007, around 3 a.m.
Here we go.
My children have been begging me to submit this story for months. It's just short and sweet. I was 17 when this happened. It was early spring. We had an alley behind our house, and I'd often walk down it to the streets on either side of the block. I was returning home one early morning and was only a few houses away from my backyard when I either heard a sound or had a sudden urge to check behind me. I can't remember what made me look, but I looked back and saw the outline of something running across the alley. My first thought was it was a cat, but then I realized it was running on two legs. Even though I saw it for just a split second, it passed under a streetlight as it was entering the bushes. And I specifically watched to see if it had a tail. I could not believe what I was looking at. All I saw were a pair of teeny tiny legs. I remember thinking to myself that it looked like a baby doll had come to life. I never saw the top half, whatever it was. But I can still picture those little legs running into the bushes clearly in my memory. I don't want to claim to know what it was, and I didn't mention it for years. I felt like I wanted to hold the belief in the mystery close. We love your show. You do a wonderful job of researching and retelling these strange and magical stories, but truly, I love listening to the three of you making each other laugh equally as much as the actual content of the episodes. It reminds me of sitting with my cousins and laughing about nothing, but it means everything.
That's sweet.
Well, cheers to you, Jonna, and your cousins, and your kids.
That's so true. Such a true statement, too. Laughing about nothing, but it means everything.
That's a great line.
Yeah. I mean, life is about those, I think.
Yeah, that's when you know, like, you're among people that you really are connected with.
And being fully present in the moment.
Yeah. There are some moments like that. We had some friends over, it was a few months ago, I think. We were all sitting in the living room. We don't get to see our friends a lot, but it was like, I think the only time we've had, more than four people at the house or something. We're all sitting in the living room, and there was just a moment where Chris and I both later talked about it. We both looked around. We're like, this is good. Just nice. Like, everyone's having fun, like, talking
kind of
to each other.
Time freezes, and you look around, and you're like, oh, man, I'm loving this moment. There was a moment we were up at Schwartz Brewing, and Brian was with us. We hadn't seen Brian in a long time. And Jeremy and Brian are in a motel bed, and we were watching music videos or something. We had some drinks at the brewery and having a great night. And I'm just sitting there watching this music video. I look over, and Brian's just showing something to Jeremy on his phone, and they're giggling. It's just a ridiculous moment. It was great. It was one of those moments where you're like, oh, this is nice. Life is good right now.
Yeah.
Friends hanging out.
Good stuff.
But yes, anyways, the story.
Yeah, just love that little tale of the tiny legs. What was that?
Yeah, a little strange little. I mean, there's so many accounts of little things running around. Last night I was standing outside, John, your old back porch, which is now my back porch. And I just was listening to a podcast, and I suddenly noticed, and it startled me for a moment, these two very bright, glowing orange eyes. I was like, are those eyes? What is that? Like, the bush is right next, like, right in front of the porch where that big tree is, just glaring at me, and it freaked me out a little bit. I had Jeremy come check it out, but it was a cat.
It was a cat.
It scared
me. That was
me.
A great story, Chris.
I knew it was a cat. Most of me knew it was a cat.
But it scared you.
You spend too much time in the hole.
I do.
Cat!
I saved his life that night.
But anyway, thanks again, Jonna, for that strange little story. Just another one of those weird little things you come across that you can't really explain.
Yeah.
We should drop in that picture that Mike sent me.
Oh, yeah.
So my buddy Mike, I think he does listen to the show. Super interested in weird paranormal stuff. He sent me a picture of it looked like a fawn, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a baby deer. Like, completely.
It'll be on the screen here.
Yeah. It's like a, I don't even know how to describe it. There's no, I mean, it's like in
just the hindquarters.
Yeah, just the hindquarters. It's like, it looks like it got trapped in a portal or something. But there's no blood or there's no sign of any violence or anything. It's
weird. Yeah, I didn't zoom in on it, but that is very strange. There is no blood.
It looks like it dove into the earth and it got sealed.
Oh, that's weird.
Isn't that weird?
Like Philadelphia experiment style.
It was on my phone and I was driving, so I didn't get a good look at it. Other than that's weird. But zooming in on
it. So strange. And just the way it's positioned too, it just looks so bizarre.
Yeah.
What does that?
Well, I assumed before I zoomed in and saw that there's no blood. It doesn't even look like there's much disturbance in the grass.
No.
I assumed that it was probably, like, you know, sometimes people will grab roadkill, especially deer, from the side of the road and end up eating them, hooking them up. But maybe they just, I'm not familiar with how you prep a deer for eating.
They didn't want the rump.
So I didn't know, maybe they just cut the hindquarters off, but there's zero blood.
No blood around it.
Which is weird, because it looks fresh. I mean, the deer isn't rotted.
That's exactly.
It's super fresh. There's no decay.
That could be a day or two old.
Or less, even. I mean, there's nothing's picked at it.
That's true.
That is really strange. The more I'm looking at this, the more strange
there's
that is.
There's no blood on the fur, nothing around it. I know it's sad, but it's really bizarre.
Maybe he's stuck in a gopher hole.
Could be UFO. I mean, that almost reminds me of...
Zapped in half.
Yeah, it does kind of, because there's no signs of trauma, it almost does kind of remind me of some of the cattle mutilation stuff.
Yeah.
Strange.
Yeah, let us know if anyone has any ideas about what it could be.
Yeah. It could be, I mean, is it possible, like, I mean, you never know, like, how it got that way. It is weird. It's possible that, like, it was hit by something and just, like, the sheer force, like, shredded it. And
there'd be blood. Yeah. It's too fresh.
Maybe the blood fell out on the way.
When has that ever happened, where a deer gets completely cut in half?
Never.
From a...
With no edges.
This is a neighborhood. This is like
it's not the highway?
I'm pretty sure this is his neighborhood.
Well, that's weird.
I'm pretty sure.
I mean, could it be...
Let me see.
Could it be that the deer... That it was someone who had, like, let's say, hunted, killed the deer, didn't need the hindquarters, and maybe there's no blood because it was refrigerated and the blood had been already drained out, and then they just threw this and happened to land in a way that the the raw meat.
So it's in a, it's in, I like mean, it's, a, yeah. it's, it is in a, was in a nice neighborhood. I mean, he
yeah,
said
there's fresh grass had just been set down.
So
like,
there's a dog man running around the neighborhood. Just weird. It's just very strange.
Very surgical dog man.
It's, you know, it's probably not anything paranormal or, but it, I feel like potential.
But it is a mystery for you to solve. So let us know if you are familiar with what this might be.
Anyway.
All right, guys. When we come back from this break, we are going to be diving into more stories. We've got coming up the urn and the entity, the night I died, that's not the moon, final destination, and eyes of the bus driver. So you're not going to want to miss these. We'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
And now, here's a clip from this week's Members Only episode, where we're covering some of the most mind-bending stories that we've ever come across. Very strange and unique tales indeed, with the help of Richard Freeman's new book, The Highest Strangeness. Check it out.
One evening in 1940, as she was chatting to her husband, Mrs. Smith said, quite out of the blue, "It will come over the hill when it comes." Afterwards, she had no recollection of saying this, even though her husband insisted that she had. Shortly after, she became nervous about being in the house after dark. About 3 months later, she woke her husband one night and told him that the thing from over the hill was nearly upon them. They heard one of the outside doors opening and a heavy, wet tread upon the stairs. As the Smiths clung together, the door swung open, and a hideous thing waded in. It was bloated and naked, with skin blotched green, purple, and yellow. It had a head that almost came to a point at the top, long earlobes that nearly reached its shoulders, webbed feet, and a thick bull neck.
If you dug that sneak peek at this week's members episode, head on over to beliefhold.com and sign up for double the episodes and an ad-free experience. We'll be waiting for you. Welcome back, my friends.
Hi.
Hey.
Hope you had a restful break because it's about to get a little trying in the way of terror. Right, Jer? Right, John?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What? Why? What's the story? What's the next one?
Oh, I don't know. I thought you were taking it away.
Yeah. I'm not sure what the next one was.
Yeah.
Actually, this one is not very frightening.
No, this is a good one.
This is a very fascinating, unique, more of a cerebral, otherworldly sort of tale. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it, Jer? John, this is the one you were excited about at the beginning of the episode.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Oh, yeah. This is a really interesting account from a listener who is a former firefighter, and he has experience with, I think he said he was a nurse. Or
I think he said EMP.
Some kind of emergency fella.
Emergency medical person, probably. Personnel.
Which is, so it puts him in a unique perspective to have this kind of experience.
I thought it was an EMT.
He said EMP.
Yeah, I think they're slightly different.
I'm not sure.
Huh.
This is a great example of if we do a nursing, we were going to do like a nurse-themed hospital, haunted hospitals episode. But, you know, people that are close to death like this have unique experiences. And in this experience, he was close in more than one way. This is called The Night I Died, and this comes from Dakota.
I'm not sure if I chose the correct category. To begin with full disclosure, this happened at a time when I was very depressed, was drinking heavily, and was not healthy. It was 2016. I had just separated from my career as a firefighter. A couple of years ago, I was having some pains, more like aches in my chest. At my age, this isn't that strange. When I spoke with my health provider, an EKG confirmed that I had not experienced a heart attack. The night as I was falling asleep, I remembered everything. My chest was sore from where my friends had performed CPR. I still can't remember why or the events that led to my cardiac arrest. I remember two friends who are skilled responders performing CPR. I remember sweat falling from Ben's face. It fell on my face and rolled down the bridge between my top lip and nose. I could taste the sweat when it came to the corner of my mouth. I remember Lulu taking over chest compressions. Ben gave me breaths. I would have never expected either of them to give rescue breaths. It went on for probably 10 minutes. Ben and Lulu were both soaked with sweat. Lulu spoke at first, that too much time had passed. Help had still not shown up, and continuing was futile. Ben didn't speak. He just sat backward and cried. I was pissed at myself for hurting him that way. I agreed with Lulu. It was time to stop. I remember drifting away as they embraced each other. I knew my body was still laying on the floor, but I was going somewhere else. It was like floating down a gentle river. I asked them about it, and neither of them remember it. They have both attributed my memories to my intoxication and depression. I know what dream memories feel like. This is different. My chest is sore, like the broken bones in my arm and leg. I'm a healthcare provider. I understand both the physiological and psychological circumstances. I believe that I was in a world, and now I'm in another. I was listening to an episode on portals and decided to share this story with you. I now live in Western North Carolina in Appalachia. I find evidence of the unexplained everywhere. I seek it out. It's like if I can prove or disprove something, maybe I can understand my own experience. Keep up the good work. Love and Weirdness, Dakota.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Super weird, yeah. The idea of just having your friends not remember something like that would be kind of terrifying to me.
Oh, yeah.
Like, am I losing my mind?
Right. Or in this case, am I in a parallel reality?
Right.
So is that where he's kind of landed? Does he think he was from universe A and now he's in universe B after his NDE? Is that sort of, because you followed up with him, right? Is that what he was saying?
I think he said that he felt like the moment he died, realities were passing through. It was like a crossing over of realities, potentially. I think that's kind of his theory. Quote, I believe the two realities were crossing over each other, and I became loose from one and ended up in another. So this river that he felt like he was being kind of floating down this river was that kind of near-death experience, but then as he died in that reality, he was almost sounds like a walk-in into this reality.
But into another dimension as opposed to just to another person, another version of yourself.
Right.
Which is interesting. I've heard that people talk about that before. A long time ago, I heard somebody on Coast to Coast AM talking about, he'd written a book on the idea, and we've discussed this on the show, the idea of if you do certain meditation or get practiced in lucid dreaming or OBEs, that you can potentially like swap places with another version of yourself who's maybe having a better life that you'd like to enjoy.
Yeah, the quantum.
And we debated the like morality of that decision.
Yeah, it's called quantum jumping or something.
Yeah, quantum lives.
Ask Sam Beckett.
Yes.
Exactly. Wow, that's awesome. You remember his name, John.
I mean,
you get a nerd point.
He didn't really jump into himself, although he did, I think, in two episodes, like a younger version.
Yeah, he did.
I'm not saying he did that, but he definitely might have a thought or two about it.
That's true.
He would.
Give him a call.
He did have 5 doctorates, I believe. In like hieroglyphics and...
Center Man Sam. Let's get him in here.
What's his real name?
Scott Bakula.
What a crazy last name.
It's awesome. It's like a superhero vampire.
Bakula.
Bakula.
It does sound like a version of Dracula.
What words rhyme with Dracula?
Besides Bakula?
Snackula.
That's
true. Get out of the refrigerator, Snackula. That's what you call your vampire friend when he's eating all your food.
He's a super nice guy, apparently. You can tell, too, if you want study him closely.
He's a good dude. It makes sense that he kind of like, I don't say he raised me, but... watching Quantum Leap.
We got a lot of our morality from Quantum Leap.
Yeah. It was like camp, a kind of church, but mostly Scott Bakula and Quantum Leap, Sam Beckett.
It's about the deeper questions, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
He really had some very difficult kind of choices to make.
He did.
Oh, for sure.
Very
and every day I went to school, I strived to put right what once went wrong.
Hoping that each leap, the next leap, will be the leap home.
Flash screen to Chris getting like...
just knocked in the face.
Thrown in his face.
Dork. I had friends. Anyway, thank you for sharing that story. What a fast. I would like to follow up on that. We should do another episode on that sometime because we only, I think, did it as a partial episode as far as like quantum entangling souls. That would be fun to do.
Yeah.
I feel like that'd be something up your alley, John.
Yeah. We should do like an uplifting episode.
Yeah.
Something a little less dark. Oh, this is kind of a mixed bag.
Yeah, we're dealing
dragons with... weren't very dark.
Right.
Yeah, it's more fun.
And this episode's got, it's got a nice blend of premonitions, UFOs in the sky.
Right.
Unidentified things.
I just did that really sweet episode in the expansion about the disembodying witches cult. Remember? That was uplifting and not dark at all or gruesome.
The ghoul body stealing witch cult? Yeah. That was very uplifting.
That was pretty dark.
Speaking of uplifting, what's our next tale?
Ah, yes. This one is not uplifting, but it's not tragically sad. There's some sadness in it. Okay. It's a good story. I'll just leave it at that. And you can make what you will of it. But I thought this was just well-written and I think relatable to a lot of people.
This comes from Alina, is that right?
Yeah, this comes from Alina. This happened to Alina when her grandmother passed away in 2016 in Western Pennsylvania.
I was listening to your episode from season 6, True Paranormal Stories, Airplane Gremlins, Harper's Ferry Ghosts, and Haunted Urns. It included a story about a roommate bringing his father's ashes into the garage, and the storyteller was pissed about it because of the haunted stuff occurring around that time. And that reminded me of something that happened to me back in 2016. I literally stopped working to type this out so I wouldn't forget. My fraternal grandma passed away in the summer of 2016 after having a heart attack, which the doctors didn't catch in time. This was my third year in a row where I had a grandparent die, so it was pretty rough. My grandma wanted to be cremated, so I never saw her body during her funeral, which honestly was preferable because it makes me sad to see dead bodies at funeral homes. We had a service for her, and then we received her ashes to spread and bury beside my grandpa, who died the year before. I told my parents that I wasn't comfortable with grandma's ashes potentially being inside our house. They said, oh, they would store them at her house. I found out later that was not the case. The next couple days, I began to sense a strange dark presence around my house. Specifically in the stairwell. It felt like when I was upstairs, there was something watching me from the second to the top step. I kept seeing a shadow figure around there in the corner of my eyes, but it would be gone when I looked. Around that time, I had some friends over for a party sleepover. We were all off during college break, and I kept glancing over at that stairwell. At one point, one of my friends went to the bathroom. When they came back out, they stopped at the door that leads to the staircase. They shut the door. When I asked them why they did that, they said, "It just feels like someone has been staring at us the whole time we've been up here." I was baffled because I thought it was just me. It turns out my two friends who I had over had also been feeling the same way I was, like there was a weird shadow figure standing on the steps, staring at us. This did not feel like my grandma's spirit at all. I have had a couple of experiences with her presence since she passed, and they were always sweet and comforting. This was not. But we just ignored the strange, dark feeling of being watched for the rest of the night. The next day, I asked my parents if Grandma's ashes were actually in the house at that moment. They were shocked that I knew they were in the house, even though they had previously told me otherwise. I asked them again if they could move her ashes somewhere else, and they listened this time. After that, I didn't have any other weird feelings with her ashes, and there hasn't been a strange shadow figure staring at me from the steps since then. We buried half of her ashes with my grandpa and spread the other half in her happy place on our property. As far as I'm aware, the ashes in the urn are most likely buried in the cemetery with grandpa. I hope you liked this short little strange story about my grandma's ashes. I do not believe that was her spirit to this day, but I don't have any other explanation for it. Happy hauntings. Alina.
Okay, Chris, before you get into your theory, is it possible that ashes can act as a kind of like, you know, like the fish food flakes in the gosh. Fish come up?
Yes.
But for things that are looking to feed off of grief?
Grief eater.
If it's like a dark, if this is a dark presence.
Yeah, like a kibble. I mean, I don't think it has to be ashes per se. I think we've talked about this before where, you know, sometimes the death of someone can be a conduit or an entrance for something that isn't the spirit of that person who died. But they're,
right.
We've covered so many stories where that happens, where like someone died recently and then suddenly there's a dark energy that's obviously not their relative. Like there's something. I just think it's interesting in this case that there's an urn. It's almost like is it attached to that urn? If it left when the urn left, like a genie in a lamp kind of situation, I wonder how those rules work, if that is indeed what happened.
But why would it be attached to the urn, though?
Because it arrived when the grandmother's ashes were put in the house, and when the urn was taken away, the shadow entity, that sensation of being watched, left as well.
Well, maybe it was just the relief of our listener, Elena, the relief of her knowing that the ashes had been moved. Maybe that there just wasn't the fuel there.
Oh, I see. The thing couldn't continue to feed. Maybe. I don't know.
We don't know is the problem. And that's why we have this show, because we can just keep asking questions. What do you guys think?
Never a true answer. Completely, anyways.
Never complete. Never totally complete answer.
Yeah, there's never like a finalized solved math problem.
Right.
Like, oh, this is what it is.
Except for dragon theory. I think we proved that.
This isn't true crime where we might have an actual solution to a murder.
Like, exactly. He did it.
We can only theorize, which is part of the fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. But great story. Thank you, Alina. That was a nice little creepy tale.
Yes.
To get us back out of the break.
What's next, Jer? This is a long time coming, this story, isn't it?
Yeah. This comes from Lobster Jimmy, who, her real name is Elizabeth, but I like Lobster Jimmy. It's fun. Yeah, this is, like I mentioned earlier at the beginning of the episode, very Final Destination-esque, tragic story involving her father, who is a pilot, who I think flew as like a hobby, and the events that unfolded in a way that would become very prophetic based on a dream she had. I call this A Girl Dreams a Fated Flight. This is a really good story. I'm glad you liked my telling of the spook at the end of the hall. Well, here's a story I've never told anyone before. In 1966, I was 8 years old. Usually late June or early July, we would go to a little resort called Shorewood in Chautauqua, Wisconsin, for a week. Mom would drive my brother and I there, and on this particular trip, she brought a friend along, whose name was Lucretia. My dad, who was a building contractor, would fly up late in the week after work to spend some time with us. My dad was in a plane club with two other men. If memory serves, one was a doctor and one was an architect. They co-owned the small single-engine Cessna and all took turns using it for vacations and sharing in the costs. I remember about a week before we were to leave for the summer trip, I started to have really bad dreams about the plane my dad flew, crashing. Even as a child, I did not enjoy flying. I still don't, and it has been many years since I've been on a plane. Flying for me now would require copious amounts of vodka and tranks. I'm a firm believer that if God wanted us to fly, he would have put wings on our backs. But I digress. Night after night, I kept having this dream about my dad's plane crashing through tall white pine trees and high tension wires. I also knew that my mom's little Yorkshire Terrier, Tinkerbell, was part of this nightmare. I was really close to my dad. He's been gone for over 20 years, but I miss him every day. When you're a little girl of 8, you don't have the ability to verbalize your fears, and I honestly didn't think anyone would take me seriously, given my extreme aversion to flying at the tender age of 8. But I tried. I really did try to talk them out of this trip. My grandpa and grandma on my mom's side also came up for the week, but they stayed at a little resort across the lake called Morning Sun. It was Sunday late afternoon when it happened. Dad had flown up on Thursday night. We had a nice fish fry Friday, and on Saturday, Dad and I spent the day fishing off the dam. The airport in Chetek at that time was nothing more than a large mowed field with a couple dilapidated airplane hangars and a windsock. No high tech here. The plan was Dad, Mom, and Lucretia were going to go for a plane ride. My older brother and I were going to watch them take off and then walk a quarter mile further to the beach and go swimming. That morning, I tried everything I knew to try to talk them out of this plane trip, but to no avail. I knew what was going to happen. I was scared to death, but who listens to an 8-year-old? So, my brother and I stood on the road and watched Dad taxi the plane to the correct side of the field, which meant he was flying into the wind for lift. That's where the windsock came in. If the sock was pointing north, you took off to the south. simple aerodynamics, take off into the wind. I remember standing there with my brother, watching Dad turn the plane toward the wind, check his flaps, then power up for takeoff. My brother and I had flown with Dad many times. We both understood how things should go. As Dad juiced the engine and the small plane lifted off, coming toward my brother and myself, I knew everything was wrong. Then I heard my brother say, "Dad, you gotta pull back on the stick." At the end of the runway were tall white pines and high tension wires. The little Cessna cleared none of them. We stood there and watched as the plane went through the trees and into the wires. It was exactly like my dream, right down to the part where my mom's little dog went through the propeller but wasn't killed outright, and a police officer had to shoot her on the spot. In 1966, in a small lake town on a Sunday afternoon, you can imagine, there wasn't a lot in the way of emergency help and first responders. The plane ended up in the yard of some people who were having Sunday dinner. The lady came out to me and my brother, and we told her it was our parents in the wreckage. A lot of what happened after that, I don't remember. The lady took us to Morning Sun Resort, where my grandma and grandpa were, and told my grandma the plane had crashed. I have enclosed pictures from the Shattuck newspaper. The lady kneeling over the stretcher is my mom. Dad is on the stretcher. And Lucretia had to be cut out of the fuselage as she was in the back seat. The lady in the white blouse owned the yard the plane crashed into. She has since passed, but I still remember her kindness. I still have prophetic dreams, and I always pay attention to them. I am an empath, which I learned later from my grandma I come by naturally, as my great-grandmother was also gifted with the shine. It can be a burden at times, and I find I tend to keep to myself, as knowing things about others and their fate can be an emotional minefield. Your friend in thought and deed, Lobster Jimmy, a.k.a. Elizabeth.
Thank you so much for that story.
Oh, wow. Thank you for sharing that, and so sorry for your loss.
Yeah, that is intense. Truly awful.
Yeah, I can't imagine going through that.
And then it's compounded with knowing, you know, the dream, and it's like, how do you deal with all that at the same time?
Especially being 8 years old, and as she said, no one would listen to her, you know, man.
Well, that makes me believe that there's a lot more to this reality for sure than we know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, time is not real.
No.
Just in this version.
We live in a chronological timescape.
The 3D world, but
yeah,
there's an outside of time potential that exists as well.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that some people can access. Yeah, I always think of it too. I think everybody somewhere deep down has that ability to, I picture time as like an ocean, and once in a while the current is moving and your head bobs up and you see above this linear time and it's everything touching. Yeah, that's the upper world out of that liquid. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's real. Like, I think that they're, especially with significant things in personal experiences,
bigger things,
big events like this or personal experiences you have that are tragic in your life, things that are going to cause a major ripple.
Right.
I think sometimes those ripples roll back and we feel those things retroactively, if that's the right phrase.
It's interesting, yeah.
I've had a lot of examples of that that I won't get into right now, but...
Yeah, and even if you can't act on it or you're not successful in the attempts to, like in this case, avert catastrophe and tragedy, at least it points to that greater reality.
Yeah.
You know, that it's not meaningless.
Yeah, do you guys remember, I don't know if we cover this in detail. We did a premonition episode in season one or two, and I don't remember if I brought this example up, but there was that famous case that you might have heard about if we didn't cover it. But there was a school, it's really tragic, a school in Aberfan. This was in 1966. It was a bunch of young kids. And a bunch of the children had actually had these terrible nightmares about dying in their school.
Really?
Yeah, one of the kids in particular, Errol May Jones, he was 10 years old. And the night before he died, she had had a dream. And she told her mom that morning, quote, "Mommy, I'm not afraid to die. I just want to go to sleep and be with Jesus." She had reportedly dreamed that previous night that her school was buried in something black. And that day at school, there was some sort of coal disaster and the entire school was covered with coal.
Wow.
And all the children died. But several of the children had premonitions and had in their sleep. So much like this story where the dream, those ripples go back into the subconscious somehow. I don't know how it works, but
that's got to be somewhat reassuring to hear that from your kid.
That there's some kind of message, even if you can't do anything about it, there's, to your point, John, makes you appreciate that there's more to this reality and not just this materialistic world.
For sure.
Yeah. And knowing that your children were saved from that, essentially, in the sense that they have the, I guess, that mercy of like, I'm going to be okay, and telling your parents that.
In Errol's case, yeah.
Yeah.
Heavy stuff.
Well, anyways.
Anyway, so yeah, heavy.
Thank you, Lobster Jimmy, Elizabeth. We appreciate it.
Where do you want to go next down this road, Jer? We've got a little bit of a variety left.
Oh, yeah.
I think two tales left on the roadmap of the whole tonight.
You know, speaking of roadmaps, Chris, I bet a lot of our listeners are hitting the road this summer. Chasing Squatch, outrunning skinwalkers, maybe stay off those reservation roads at night. Or perhaps you and your lady or fella are road tripping to a haunted hot spring. Regardless, I'm sure you're not going to do all that driving without insurance. I mean, you might be a great driver, but with all the weirdies out there, why take the risk? And the same goes for the internet, my friends. Going online without ExpressVPN just isn't worth the risk. Say you're like us and you spend a lot of time hopping around different coffee shops and haunted cafes. Maybe you're at an airport or hotel or some sketchy diner on a creepy, desolate highway. Not using a VPN at this point is like inviting the vampires inside. Passwords, bank logins, all your personal info just sitting there to be snarfled up by some goober or goblin. And the scary part is it's pretty common. Nowadays, a halfway clever 12-year-old with a YouTube tutorial could jack your digital identity before you finish your muffin. And your data's not just floating around in the ether, harmlessly. On the dark web, it's worth real money. Hackers can make up to $1,000 per person. And that's your money, not theirs.
No.
They suck.
Maybe so.
But there is a way to keep it out of their grubby little hands.
Gross.
ExpressVPN. It wraps your online activity in a secure encrypted tunnel, so no digital gremlins or Wi-Fi warlocks can sneak in. And in a world where technology is supposed to have made things more convenient, but I feel like it's usually overcomplicated, ExpressVPN is super easy to use. You just fire up the app and click one button to get protected. And it works on all kinds of devices. Phones, laptops, tablets, whatever you're taking with you on the next adventure. And for me, I'm not the most proactive person when it comes to planning ahead or protecting myself from this kind of stuff. But because it's so easy, I turn on ExpressVPN whenever I go out. You know, there's a lot of good people in this world, but there's also a lot of ick. And I like using ExpressVPN because that's one less boogeyman I've got to worry about.
Oh, man.
So secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/whole. That's expressvpn.com/whole to find out how you can get up to 4 extra free months. expressvpn.com/whole. Check the show notes or video description for a direct link and go grab it today. Yeah, this next story comes from, in his own words, Laban. This is one of those great little accounts where it just starts like any normal evening, hanging out with the family at home, when something unexpected happens. One of these weird little moments that just make you go, what the heck was that? And that's what we're going to hear now, without giving too much away. This is called That's Not the Moon. And this occurred around February 22nd or 23rd, he believes, of this year, I think, in Asheboro, North Carolina.
Hey guys, quick story I wanted to share. Possible UFO encounter that actually my 4-year-old son pointed out first. So we live just barely inside city limits in central North Carolina. And one night I had him let the dogs outside so that they could use the bathroom before bed. So it's maybe 9:30 p.m. And he takes the dogs outside. And immediately he runs back in the door and he says, Daddy, Daddy, you need to come look at this. What's this white circle in the sky? He's got a pretty good track record of pointing out the moon. So I walked outside. It's cloudy, but I can just barely see the moon in front of me. And I said, That's just the moon, buddy. And he says, "No, Daddy, I know what that is. I'm talking about that one over there." He points almost directly overhead, probably 3,000 to 4,000 feet in the air. And there is just a solid white circle. It's not like irradiating light. It's just white. Perfectly round, pure white, directly overhead. And he says, "What is that?" And I froze for a second and I was like, "Buddy, I have no freaking idea." I was like, "Let's go inside for a minute." As soon as I told him, you know, "Let's go inside," it disappears. Didn't move, just blipped out of existence. So we go back inside and my wife's sitting on the couch and she says, "It was just the moon, wasn't it?" And I kind of looked at her and I was like, "No. I don't know what it was, but it wasn't the moon." And she was like, "Well, let's go see if we can see it again." So we go back outside and the moon again is directly out the front door. And we're looking around and we're not seeing anything. And then all of a sudden, my wife says, "Did it look like that over there?" And so probably 2 to 3 miles north of where I had last seen it, there it is, just sitting. Pure white, same height off the ground, just sitting there. And I was like, "Yeah, that's it." And she says, "What the hell is that?" And again, I was like, I told her, I said, "I have no freaking idea." And about the time I finished my sentence, it disappeared. And we haven't seen anything else like it, but figured you guys might enjoy it. Maybe some other people around the area have seen something similar, or maybe have an answer for what it might be. I guess another important thing to note was there was no sound. That's how I know it wasn't, you know, like a helicopter or anything like that. It was completely silent. Appreciate everything y'all do. Really enjoy the show. Hopefully I'll send in some more submissions soon. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Laban.
Interesting.
Big white balls in the sky.
Yeah, big white circle. Very unique description.
I think I'd rather see that than a tentacled black cube. It just seems a little less ominous.
For sure.
Yeah, anybody out there in Asheboro, North Carolina, if you've seen anything similar, again, this happened in February, late February, but I looked at newfork.com and there are a lot of reports of a similar object in across the United States. There's one in Wrangell, Arkansas, August 2004, Edgewood, New Mexico, 2021. But again, you just have a string of these reports that are very similar as far as this being just like a white circle that appears
not illuminated. That's so strange.
Yeah, disappears, you know, out of nowhere in an instant. What are these things?
The eye of some sort of ancient god speaking in.
That's probably what it is, Chris.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just like that little account. You know, sometimes that's all you can do is just see something. And it's happened so quick.
Yeah.
And yet it's real.
It's all real.
Proves greater reality.
All right. This last story, Jer, this one is very unique.
Yeah, let's get off the Beliefhole bus with the help of a bus driver.
Hail to the bus driver, bus driver, bus driver. Hail to the bus driver.
This is not a real song.
Fans. He drinks and he cusses.
Oh, wait, that is a song.
Hugs and he touches. That's not the line. He hugs.
We used to sing it all the time when we get on the bus.
Was it?
That's so funny, dude.
Was that one of those bus jingles?
Song. Yeah.
Totally forgot about that.
The wheels of the bus go round.
I know that
round.
One. Everyone knows that one.
He drinks and he cusses and smells up the buses.
Oh, this sounds familiar.
That's
now.
So mean.
Very mean.
There's a big shortage of bus drivers now. I'm always seeing signs.
Probably
bus
why.
Drivers needed. It's probably because of kids like you.
John and his friends.
No, they liked it. As far as I remember.
I guess it keeps the kids like from doing other stuff, messing around.
That's true.
It is a little like, I don't know if I would appreciate that if I was the bus driver.
I'm stinking up the bus.
Like, what is my life?
If you got a good sense of humor and you're self-deprecating. But yeah, a bunch of kids.
I don't think that was really the case for most of the bus drivers. They were pretty, like, they were the song. A lot of them were female,
They lived the song. They lived the life of the song.
Kind of rough around the edges.
Yeah.
Kind of surprised they allowed a lot of those people to drive their kids around, but.
I mean, I can imagine that could make you rough around the edges. You wake up early yeah. and you're driving a bunch of loud kids to school.
Yelling kids all the time.
There's a lot of disrespectful kids, I remember.
Yeah.
Just doing yeah. awful stuff.
There are some great stories.
I had a friend that did some terrible stuff.
We had a friend, yeah, who would drop stuff in the bus driver's hair.
Yes, very disgusting things.
I hope there's no bus drivers listening to this.
If you are listening,
you're the special one. Because if you're listening to Belief Hole,
you're the hero,
and you are a truly special person.
Yeah, thank you for your service.
I thought it'd be kind of a fun job, except for the getting up early.
It'd be fun. It's a lot of responsibility.
I don't think it'd be fun at all.
I like driving.
Buses look fun.
I don't think it's like it's not. This is an Uber, Jeremy, or DoorDash.
I know what a bus is, John.
You're
been on
picking up kids and making sure no one's killing each other. And
that's true. There's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, a lot of responsibility. And you're driving a freaking tank.
Yeah. Tanks are fun and deadly.
Not when you're responsible for 60 of the lives in it.
That's what I'm saying. It's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
I thrive on responsibility. I thrive on that kind of risk. Give me your kids.
Anyway, what's this last story?
Let's get back on the bus. This story comes from Nils,
a German man.
He's a German fella, but he lives in Norway, and I think he might be an author. And you can tell from some of the he submitted a written version, but also a SpeakPipe. And I wanted to use his voice because you can kind of hear the vulnerability, and I like the accent a lot. So we're gonna play his experience in his own voice. But I just wanted to set up with a quote from his writing of his experience.
Let's hear it.
I was 16 that rainy morning. Now, at 28, I still shudder when I think of it. The day had started just like any other, a cold, wind-lashed morning, the sky an endless slate of gray. I climbed aboard our familiar yellow school bus, already dreading the drudgery of another school day. But as we pulled away, something was unmistakably wrong. The streets were empty, and at the next stop, an old, battered bus waited silently. Its paint was peeling, the windows fogged, as if hiding secrets. Unlike our usual bus, teeming with a chorus of teenage voices, this one was nearly empty. A few of us huddled in uneasy silence.
This is called Eyes of the Bus Driver.
I'm excited to share my story. First of all, you don't need to believe, but you can. You want to. So anyway, I'm from Germany. I recently moved to Norway. I'm 28 years old. And something strange happened to me 12 years ago. It was like an interdimensional experience. Actually, I cannot explain what it had to do with anything, but something was eerie. Something was different on this day. I was going normally to school. It was one of these very cold and very windy autumns you have, and it was very early in the morning. And you typically have always one bus driver and one bus line, especially in Germany when you want to go to school. But on this day, something was different. A lot of strange encounters I had in my life, but at this time, I really was a little bit afraid. I was sitting in a bus, which bus was usually filled the mornings with people. It was filled with students, with people going to school, with people who need to go to work. We don't have just clear bus lines who are driving to school in Germany. Anyway, the bus driver wanted to talk to me for some reason. I don't know, it was strange. Talk, a strange conversation. Usually the bus drive always takes half an hour. This time it took almost an hour. I believed because I was looking at my watch and it took actually half an hour. It was not more. But during we talked, the time was strangely going very straightforward, very, very fast. Our conversation was very intense. I had a strange feeling with him before because he just said, come here, I'm feeling a little bit lonely. So then we talked about his wife that is sick, about the kids that is sick. And then he gave me one advice in the end. He said, whatever you do, choose carefully And I was looking into his eyes. And like I said, my opinion is it was an interdimensional encounter. I think it was me. I'm not a bus driver. I have nothing to do with buses. I like to ride buses, but not to drive it. But there was something in his eyes what is unexplainable. What was and what still is unexplainable. For me, it was the first time now I'm telling to someone, because at this day, everything was different. I cannot remember which day exactly it was, but after this conversation, I had a whole day, a very strange feeling to be followed. I had a strange feeling that something is different, that something is going on. And it was the first time in my life, besides all the other encounters I had already, where I really was thinking, okay, this must be really an evidence for interdimensional experiences. So in the end, he was set me down in front of the school, usually what they don't do because to walk to school is still 500 meters left. But he left me out directly in school. He said, I'm sorry for the delay. There was no delay. And he said, you can contact me whenever you want to. But he never left something. He never left a phone number. He never left an email or anything else. So what do you think? When I was looking into his eyes, in his face, I saw me. And I had this strange feeling. And I wanted to ask. But it wasn't me. I can write you this story if you want to have contact to me. Please reach out. Maybe someone else have the same experience.
Thank you, Nils.
Weird.
Chills, man. I got chills.
Yeah, that's very strange.
To be experience. So affected by a conversation like that, yeah. That you feel, you remember it so vividly so many years later, but also, yeah, you feel it was you. That's so, so bizarre.
Something in the eyes.
Maybe like an aspect of your soul.
Yeah. Well, the way he describes it in his written account, which I'll have it linked on in the show notes, we'll put it on the website. He refers to it as, quote, a ghostly echo of my own future, a self who had lived the consequences of decisions I had yet to make. That's what he felt.
Oh, wow. That's like another weird aspect of that, again, that idea of the ripples of time rolling back. This time it's personified as a person, yourself visiting you.
Yeah. And with that kind of warning that, where he said, whatever you do, choose carefully.
That's ominous. It's coming from your future self.
Yeah, very. Especially how, did he say how old he was?
At the time, I think he said,
was 28, right? Or he is 28.
Yeah, he was 16, I believe.
Okay. So old enough to like process it, not like super young.
Right.
I'm guessing, because he said he thought it was evidence of interdimensionality. I wonder if this person didn't look quite like him, but it was something in the eyes. And that's why he was thinking maybe a future him from a parallel reality.
Well, now we're going back to Sam Beckett, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two stories kind of in that realm today.
Fascinating. Yeah. We actually almost had a third story in this realm that we ended up cutting for time. We'll have to do, it's a Christmas story. Again, another theme example, but also relates to this parallel lives thing. And it's weird that they're all rolling in one episode.
Well, let me wrap this up with one last quote from his written account, because I just really like the way he kind of ended it. He said, quote, now years later, I still wonder about this twisted ride. Was it a mere trick of a rain-soaked, disoriented mind, or did I truly glimpse a fissure in time, a mirror reflecting the darker parts of myself? The answer, like the mysterious clock that defied time that day, remains forever out of reach. Yet sometimes, on nights when the wind howls and the rain drums a steady beat on the window, I swear I see a glint of familiar eyes watching from the dark, a reminder that some journeys never truly end. I thought that was cool. And I looked him up. I think he's a writer.
Yeah, I was going to say, Fisher in Time. I've never heard that before. Did he come up with that phrase?
I imagine.
I love
it. Very poetic.
Very poetic.
I think he writes thrillers or something.
Oh, really?
I'll have to ask him and then put in the notes. But yeah,
Thank you so much for that, Nils. That was a really interesting, account.
Very cool account. Great way to end it.
Yeah, and thank you for sharing the SpeakPipe. Anybody out there who feels like they want to tell a tale in their own words, that is an option on our website. And especially if you are from somewhere else than the United States, we love getting people with varying accents and different dialects, especially for our haunted planet themed listener story episodes that we'll do more, I'm sure.
And don't be afraid. We edit stuff too. So don't worry if you mess up or.
Yeah, don't worry about stumbling or any of that stuff. We'll make it, make it nice and clean.
But one request, if you do leave a voice SpeakPipe, to try to make sure that you're stationary, you're not driving with the window down and there's not a lot of extraneous noise like a TV on or.
Don't be out in traffic trying to record it.
Right. Or your dog barking. That will come through.
No, we won't be able to use it, probably.
Yeah.
But there is an option to listen back after you record it. So you can always check it to hear if there's, you know, some weird sounds or something, you need to record it. But anyways.
Yeah.
All right, guys. We hope you enjoyed this episode. We did.
Yes. Thanks for coming with us deeper into one of the channels of the hole, one of the deep tunnels.
Some good stories this time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank everyone for submitting.
The hole gets deeper, gets wider, gets more loving.
And warmer.
Slimier.
Okay. Come on. You had to go there.
It's in the ground.
I was going to go there.
What are you talking about?
The ground is made of slime?
Deep in the dirk hole? That's what I picture.
In the dirk hole?
Slimy hole.
What's in the dirk hole?
In the dork hole.
In the dirk hole.
Put it in Chris's dork
hole. Anyways, go to the merch shop. Buy all the stuff. We love you guys. We'll see you next time.
Yeah, we never advertise that.
All right, guys.
Do it.
On?
Believe hole.
On believe hole.
Bye-bye.
Get it.